Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
January 13, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me rattle on at the beginning. So it is a Thursday as I speak, just after 8 p.m. Eastern time in what we used to call the allegedly united former states of what was America. All that as somebody roars by with some sort of motorized something that's loud. You know, it is that day, but who knows when you'll be hearing this, how you'll be hearing this. You could be catching it further on down the stream via your fondle slab of choice or applicable application, etc. No matter who you are, where you are, when you are, welcome. Anyways, I saw on social media something from my friend JG Michael, the host of Parallax Views, the podcast, and I'll tell you something. He always gets really, really fascinating guests. A lot of them I would not have on my show, but they are always fascinating. And he is also a movie buff of sorts, and him and I do share some quirky ideas about what good cinema is. But we also universally understand art forms in a way that, well, forget about me talking about me and JG. We interact all the time. I love that guy. I endorse his show. He's about to hit 500 episodes. Let me know when you get past the 2,000 mark like me, JG. But anyway, you can check him out and you can find him, and I've done plenty of shows with him. He was talking about this thing called the Pizzagate Massacre. And I said, okay, first of all, provocative name. All right. Second of all, do I want to see this? Am I exhausted from... Remember, I'm one of those guys who, yes, indeed, I endorse a lot of conspiracy theories, but you got to have evidence. And I was one of these guys, one of the first guys, in fact, to take a lot of heat for saying there is a place there that I talk to people in D.C. who work near it, and guess what? The information doesn't track. And I've taken a lot of crap, and people have given me a lot of crap for it, and I don't care. This is what we do here. We do parse out the reality, and we do examine things that are realistic. But this trailer, I did not expect. I see a trailer for the Pizzagate Massacre, which was funny as hell. First of all, to me, I thought it was hilarious. And I do mean hilarious. I looked at this thing. I said, I absolutely have to see this movie. If somebody had just made the trailer, okay, I would have said, this is a brilliant piece of art. And that's it. I would have been satisfied with the trailer. Okay. I have on with me director, actor, writer, John Valley. And he's the guy behind the Pizzagate Massacre. I wound up buying the movie. Had to see it. And everybody knows I don't usually spend money on movies. I'm irritated at spending money on movies because it would cost me a fortune if I actually bought every single thing I really wanted to see. But I could not help myself but go get this movie. Okay? And I think after I'm done talking to John tonight here on the show, you guys will absolutely agree with me if you haven't already seen it. The Pizzagate Massacre. John, how are you, first of all?
I'm doing pretty all right, and thanks for having me on the show, Chuck. This is a pleasure.
Look, you may have never heard of my show, okay, but I got to tell you, and I had never honestly heard of your work before. Now I want to see what else it is you have done and will do in the future, my friend, because there is brilliance in this thing. It is, okay, why do I love it? Because you could look at it on the surface, okay, and take it as an entertaining story. It is just grimy enough, okay? And look, don't take offense at the stuff I'm saying. Everything, even if it sounds like it's not a compliment, I assure you it is. Okay?
Don't worry. I've spent the last few years poking holes in it myself, so I'm pretty tough to it. I love hearing any reaction.
Okay, so here is my reaction. I'm glad that your film was a low-budget film. However...
Yeah.
If there is a sequel to it, I would love to see money behind it, because I think you could do some amazing more things with it. But I am glad about its sort of... It's not bad, by the way. It's not like VHS quality, if anybody's thinking that's what I'm talking about. But I gotta be frank with you. I get the hint of the VHS kind of nostalgia, okay,
yep.
from this thing, which I don't know if it's cinematography or if it's the nature of the low, but I don't care. Either way, whether it was an accident or by design through you, this thing gives you the feel of something that is not brand new. It is an older story, even though it's talking about things in a metaphorical way that, I mean, I saw layers to your metaphors. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. So, anyway.
I love this.
enough of this. I want to hear from you, first of all, how this thing got conceived and how it got created, because, and properly credit yourself, because you have multiple credits on this film, and tell everybody what it is you've done. As far as, you know, your direct work, again, the Pizzagate yep. massacre, and we're going to tell everybody and give everybody links in the show notes to where you can see the preview and get the movie. But because I yep. strongly urge people to see it, not because it is an informational piece. I push a lot of educational stuff. This is entertaining, and this is a piece of art that. Was extremely risky in my mind for somebody to actually do, and I am more than thrilled to endorse it. So, but anyway, tell me how this started. How did this, you know, like, did somebody create this? You did somebody bring a script? Was this a group effort? I mean, talk to me about how this, you know, the initial seeds of this begin.
Yeah, so it's, you know, to speak to that VHS quality or that aged quality of it, I mean, it works practically because I'm in the low budget sphere, but I also just adore older movies. You know, I can be sort of a curmudgeon about a lot of new cinema, but there's plenty of old stuff, quote unquote old stuff, that is like incredible, near and dear to me. It's where the medium was forged, right? And so we kind of knew that going into it, that practically speaking, we had to atone to the budget and the limitations, but thematically, tonally, you know, the creative strokes we were allowed to take, like, you know, we really leaned into that vibe, all throughout the process, writing it, like where it was kind of conceived, was the final script that we ended up shooting was sort of this amalgamation of two other screenplays that I was trying to develop over, you know, course of like 3 or 4 years, and just couldn't really justify it on the page to go out and find the money to do it. Mm-hmm. Cause I found out pretty quickly that, you know, if you buy the ticket, you got to take the ride, and there's a point of no return. So you better be sure about what it is that you want to make, cause you know, it can happen and then you get really far into it. But anyway, I digress. It was always going to be a satire, I think. You know, it's sort of like a Taxi Driver inspired thing. That was kind of the most formed idea. I was going to do this spiritual remake of Taxi Driver because I adore the movie, and also it's one of those movies that a lot of the metaphors and the layers, unfortunately, still kind of exist today, and you know, you can kind of show how far we've come or lack thereof by kind of basing it on these other movies. But it's also, again, a practical thing, because I'm working with virtually no marketing footprint. You know, I mean, everything that we make is kind of in-house. I'm kind of cranking out any like graphic design that you see or whatever. You know, I didn't make the poster. That was Mark Schoenbach. He's an incredible artist who specializes in this kind of like 80s nostalgia sort of artwork. But yeah, this was like these kind of bones of a satire about American society that had been sitting around and gestating in my mind for a while. And I knew that it was going to have this sort of neo-Western vibe to it, this kind of adventure, entertaining, like action movie vibe. But I didn't know that it was going to be Pizzagate until about like, I'd say 4 or 5 months before we shot it. And it was because I had been just accruing all of this knowledge on it because I was following it. I like conspiracy theories as well. And I've been following all this stuff, and little did I know I was educating myself on this material that I would eventually write. But, you know, I always like to say that the kind of aha moment was when I met the lead actor, and I'm sure you can attest to this. His performance is pretty, like, incredible. It's enormous.
Okay, before we get into his performance, right, I want to just make you pause for a moment because you mentioned the 80s nostalgia. You mentioned a few things, and I do want to spend time on this lead actor because he is not only funny, but I actually... I'll tell you, bang up job. I mean, I've never seen this guy do anything before, and
I know
it's just like whoa. I believed his character, even in the satire, it makes sense. I mean, the way that he's throwing away lines in certain instances is so real, true to life. With some of these guys who are like, well, of course it's a Zionist banker conspiracy that absolutely runs all the cameras. You know, it's like what. You know, but that'll go by and just be a throwaway line to a guy like that. He doesn't hover on it. Brilliant job. But I digress again, because I want to go back to this 80s nostalgia feel and a couple of things. When I said the VHS quality, it's not that the film is a poor quality, mind you. What it does is it gives you that feel that reminds me of the days. Now here I'm going to date myself a bit, but reminds me of the days when I would go to an independent video store. Okay, and find a movie that nobody ever heard of. Okay, that and a lot of horror movies were like this, but there were others, and I lived in New Jersey. So there was a strange mixture of independent, semi-independent stuff going on at the time. Kevin Smith was trying to fund his movie independently originally, you know, and that kind of thing, right? When I was just getting into adulthood, when there was still, you know, not the Blockbuster and Palmer Video and that kind of thing takeover, but there used to be independent video stores. And sometimes they got independent directors' work, you know, straight from a guy selling them out of the trunk. I'm not making it up. And that's what it gave me the impression of. It wasn't of that quality because those things were always harsh quality. But this was like, but it reminded me of that. Like, I could put this on my shelf in a VHS form and be satisfied that it belongs next to that stuff. And, like, it's really neat. And even the, honestly, again, the wardrobe that is chosen is fascinating to me. I don't know if that was organic, if these guys had their own stuff, but I felt like the characters lived in their outfits a bit. I really did. And sometimes with independent films, honestly, it's like, oh, clearly this is a costume. You didn't get that impression with your film, and I don't know if that's you directing, their acting, I don't know. But I gotta say, it was very smoothly put together. Now, going to the primary actor here, who I'm not gonna spoil too much about him, but when his backstory started to get filled in a little bit, every single thing about this guy, his mannerisms, his look, even the kind of glasses he's wearing, okay? All
good
went, wow, okay, that makes sense. And this guy actually makes sense in a kind of a theater of the absurd kind of way, where it's like, this guy is really this guy. And look, not to spoil too much, and you could probably glean this from the trailer, so I'm going to just reveal that, you know, the main guy who's got the glasses and kind of the long hair, which is very typical of that late 80s look again, and the aviator-style glasses, who's in the army jacket you see in the preview, he has a backstory that makes so much ironic sense. But at the same time, he's got character flaws here. He's got some issues with even being who he proclaims to be, which is really funny. And as it's filled out, it's not like you're not being beaten over the head with the exposition. It gets filled out over time, which I like. Also, this movie's not too long, guys. What is the actual runtime? Because I think it was only a little over an hour and 20 or something.
It's just over an hour and a half. It's like 91 minutes, which I love that length. You know, like I love those kind of like hour and a half sort of just quick runtime.
Yeah, and that was perfect. Like, I'm telling you now, it didn't linger too long. I would say there's another character that, for some odd reason, is so much of a stereotype. And if you can get away with seeing this other character on screen, I'm not going to name him, but I'm just for the listeners. If you can get away with seeing this other character on screen and not thinking to yourself, is this a guy who got cut out of Me, Myself, and Irene? It's too funny. It's like this guy is such a cartoon. And yet he exists in the same world with some very believable characters, including the older militia leader. Yep. Again, I'm not revealing too much here. I'm just saying, because I want people to watch this. When you see him interact with the older militia leader, like, you believe the conflict and even the unspoken subtext of what has already previously occurred. I find this thing really to be a fascinating piece of art. But let's go ahead and focus on the main protagonist. Well, maybe they're the main protagonist, because as we learn, maybe the one who drops their headphones ends up being the main protagonist later. But
yeah, right.
Yeah. So the guy that is definitely prominent in the trailer, again, with the aviator style looking glasses, right? Let's talk about him a bit. And also, I did ask at the beginning if you could just reveal to everybody all the jobs you did on this film, because you did more than one. You are the director, and obviously you had something to do with the writing, as you described with the multiple scripts. But tell everybody exactly all of the credits you deserve on this film.
Oh, man, I might leave some of them off because that's the nature of low-budget filmmaking. But, you know, proudly I can say I'm the director, the writer. I play a pretty big character in it, a pretty nasty antagonist character. I did the wardrobe. I put all that together. I did some special effects work on it. I did the score with a partner, a friend of mine. I edited it. I did some sound design. I kind of just had my hands in every single department, because you sort of have to at this level, you know, to keep it all sort of uniform and like you said, be able to make sure that, like, yeah, we're seeing a low budget movie, but these costumes got to fit onto the shoulders of these characters, right? Like, it's got to look like they've been, you know, living in this or wearing them. And to that point, like, a lot of the costumes are the same costumes they wear throughout the whole piece, because practically we knew we weren't going to be able to have time or money to have a bunch of different costumes. But then also to this, like, kind of cartoonish, almost lifted vibe of the movie, I wanted it to kind of have that satire feel of The Simpsons, where it sort of uses, like, real world issues and dilemmas, but then throws it at cartoon characters, and you get this really cool mix of, you know, social satire. So, like, that was kind of the design behind the wardrobe. But yeah, this lead actor that you're talking about, I mean, that was, it's so much the birth of the movie. You know, I had these couple other scripts going, and I met this actor on another movie that we were acting together in called No Loss, No Gain, which is, you know, out there to be seen, currently available. It's a bank heist movie, a low budget bank heist movie. And I also met the co-star Alexandra Payne on that movie as well. And these two actors were just, you know, I'm sitting there acting in the movie, but I've got my director hat on always, and I'm kind of just watching these two and just seeing how, like, otherworldly they are. These aren't, like, you know, no offense to community theater actors, I am one, but you know, these aren't your typical community theater actors. These are, like, you know, people who know how to kind of go deep, and they themselves have very, you know, deep wells to draw from. And so, but meeting this guy, and getting to be friends with him, and just seeing how entertaining and skilled he was as an actor, I also found out that he and I kind of come from a very similar background. You know, I'm from Iowa, he's from East Texas. You know, we grew up in these red, conservative sort of rural areas. And, you know, although we would both be quick to tell you that we ascribe to sort of more, like, progressive politics and kind of this more open society sort of feel to our politics, we empathize so much and we totally understand this angst on the right. And we know these people. And rather than just make some kind of flat cartoon piece that lampoons them the whole time, or rather make a documentary that we're watching every day play out on our TVs and phones and computers, we kind of tried to strike into this middle ground to make something that's, you know, you might come into this movie with your politics on your sleeve and think you've got a bead on these characters and think you know what you feel about this lead character, Duncan. But then I guarantee you by the end of it, you will have felt for him and you will empathize with him because, you know, lo and behold, conspiracy theorists and right-wing people are people. And they have hearts and souls and personas. And, you know, so it's actually kind of easy to draw from that and create a real character if you see these people as they are and not what we're kind of led to believe by liberal media and left-wing media that they're deplorables.
Exactly. Now, an ultimate contrast to that, though, is the character you play, where, honestly, I have sympathy for Duncan. I got no sympathy for your character, okay?
And you shouldn't.
I am so happy. I am so happy that certain things happen to him. It's like this guy is and that's the thing. You didn't just go with we're going to present one point of view here, which was interesting. Yeah. Duncan certainly has a mixed bag of views. He belongs to a militia for sure. He is not without his skill set. So he's not an oaf entirely. OK, which I appreciate because you could have just gone for the full on, you know, I'm an oaf. And I screw everything up. You could have gone with that. You did not. You went for something a lot more realistic there. But the character you play, on the other hand, is very single-minded, let's say. I'm not trying to reveal too many of the details, but if you could, give people an insight into one of the antagonists here before we get into really what turns out to be Duncan's co-star that I would argue might actually be the main antagonist in the movie, or main protagonist. Yeah, no. Excuse me, protagonist. Her name again escapes me, but
Alexandria Payne.
Alexandria Payne.
It almost, and the character's name is Karen Black, which is a nice little nod to that. She's one of my favorite actresses,
Which I thought was hilarious on multiple levels. By the way, because you know, spoiler for the listeners. She is black, first of all, which I thought was hilarious, hitting that right on the nose. But also, yeah, the nod to Karen Black, sure. But same time, why not just call her that? Because of the weird position she's in, the job she does. When we get introduced to her, she's a completely different character by the end of the movie, let's say. But, you know, in my mind, we definitely see her exposited again without just striking it on the nose, watching where it is she went. And at the end, quite frankly, I consider whether that was the intention all along, really. But anyway, back to this situation with your character. If you could explain a little bit about the character you play, who is, antagonist for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's part of this bigger design of creating a spectrum of characters, right? Like you mentioned the actor that plays this kind of older sort of like father figure to the militia, who's much more like congenial and kind of more community based and family based and sort of like this really sweet saccharine kind of side of these people. And then you next down the line, you have this lead character, Duncan. He's kind of caught in the middle, sort of struggling with his own identity. He does monstrous things, but maybe he's still sort of like, you know, he definitely has a heart. You kind of see that throughout it. And then kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum is this character that I play. And, you know, it's part of a design of reality. You know, a lot of militias or gun enthusiasts are populated with those people that are really just looking for an excuse to blow somebody away. You know, they're looking for an excuse to release this like valve of hate building into them, you know, and so it becomes functional for the movie to release that valve, because I think people come into this movie, again, regardless of what side of the aisle you find yourself on with this subject material, everybody's sort of expecting that valve to be released somewhere or to see some sort of representation right. of the more like monstrous, dangerous, single-minded, side of these things that often kind of cause the most dramatic expressions of this right-wing movement to occur in the first place.
Right. You know, see,
a lot of what you see with like January 6th uh-huh. would be like, you know, like Philip, my character, Philip would have been there at January 6th.
Oh, no doubt. Look, here's the thing. I hate to interrupt you, but it's the big contrast, good. As far as I'm concerned, is that Duncan has not, to my understanding, ever really done anything extreme. We're going to see him commit extreme acts during the movie, but this will be his baptism into real violence.
Yes.
Your character, on the other hand, is aching. Let's go. I want to do it. I don't have the sense that either one of them has really truly engaged yet in actual violence. And we get to see, in my mind, the difference between somebody who is aching to be violent and somebody who feels as though they've been backed into a corner and therefore must. This mm-hmm. is a huge, huge difference between people and something that should always be considered on a serious level. Again, this is a satirical look at this situation. But even through the satirical lens, we can take serious consideration of what this actually means, what the rhetoric means when it hits the ground running. And I mean, look, it is cartoonish also. If you take a look at the, again, not spoiling anything for anybody, but let's just say somebody who works at a pizza place ends up meeting an end. And, you know, it is ridiculous what happens. mostly off screen, by the way, which was, again, great because you didn't go for the egregious action scene. But the point is made that there is, I'm being a bit facetious here, which by the way, I was wondering just out of curiosity if placing, and this again is not giving away too much from the movie, but if placing the pizza place in question in Austin, mm-hmm. Texas was also a nod, maybe a wink or possibly a subtle middle finger, at a particular media person in general. You don't have to be specific, but I'm just curious if placing it in Austin, Texas had a purpose in the subtext, my friend.
Of course it did. And, okay. You know, I'll say it. It's highly inspired by the work of Alex Jones and InfoWars, you know. That was very much this kind of, you know, when you're making something, sometimes you got to have a personal enemy while you're making the movie, you know, some kind of giant that maybe you're taking down in your head. And for me, it was Alex Jones.
I think it goes hand in hand with the media figure that you have there, which is, first of all, female, which would probably be offensive to the sensibilities of most of the extreme followers of Mr. Jones over there at Jonestown.
Yeah.
And also her general. Again, not spoiling from the movie. I'm laughing thinking about this because her commitment to what is, first of all, I don't think Jones has that level of commitment personally, but that's my editorial. That's not John's. Don't blame him. But
I agree with you 100%.
Okay. I didn't want you to be responsible for anything I say, but you want to come on in, brother. The boat is available to you. The thing is, I found that to be a wondrous, complex set of middle fingers to Mr. Jones. So I thought that was hilarious also, by the way. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Back to this
back to this character of yours that I'm glad got shot. Sorry. let's talk about this because, you know, no offense to you. It's just that this character, he needed to, you know, and even... Even in the final scene that we see him in, and I don't know if there was more that ended up on the cutting room floor, but the final scene that he is in the movie, I think it's very appropriate, the attempt to bargain. Okay, I'm being very general here.
Yeah.
The attempt to bargain. I'm like, yeah, that's how really committed you were once you got to that level. Again, I'm speaking to you. I'm sorry. I should be speaking to your character, but... It's like, you know what? Yeah, That's what that means, brother. You get to taste blood. You get it. And, you know, maybe that reality didn't hit home. And then, frankly, maybe some other characters knew that reality, were just fine with it, not going to say who. And maybe some of them couldn't live with the decisions they made also by the end of the movie. And again, this is satire. This is not a serious piece. But boy, do I get some serious messages out of it. I mean, I am the over-analyst when it comes to these things. And it's just so brilliant working with a minimalist situation. Because again, it's not a huge universe of characters that we have to get familiar with here. There is an arc which does focus, you know, it's a bit of a road trip story at a certain point. And the awkward beginning to it, it is probably the only thing that, like, I had a little trouble following the scripting on it. Like, how it is, I don't know. The way that they start their trip, okay? And I want to ask you about that. But before we get there, again, playing that character that you played and offering, like you said, the father figure, sort of older guy, Duncan, and this other guy, those three alone virtually cover the spectrum of what one might discover in those, you know, in those subcultures, honestly. And the only thing missing, really, is, and I think this is part of the satire, is that there are some serious guys who are maybe better at operating than what we see on this screen, but you can't possibly nod to everything and cover the entire spectrum well. But to me, it's a solid representation. You know, when somebody paints a tree, it's one painting, but they didn't necessarily make every single leaf. But you definitely see the tree here. So, okay. And we do have to talk about the lady that plays Miss Black there before we're done. But what have I missed so far here in the subtext or anything else? Or do you want to talk about how the road trip begins and, like, why that is? Is it awkward on purpose? Is it kind of, like, disjointed on purpose at that point? Because it's a little loose there, the way that goes on. So I was just curious if you're trying to set a certain tension there that makes it like why in the hell is this happening? Like, why we don't have all the answers is because maybe the characters themselves don't have all the answers, except, well, we might learn that one of them actually does. But is that what's being set up there?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, I mean, I'd ask you, I guess, more specifically, I have like three different answers, I guess, as to why it has an awkward start. There's like scripting things that were changed sort of after the fact, if that's what you mean, or like if you're talking about more just how these characters kind of find themselves in this pressure cooker situation together, of all people to find themselves on in a van, a quiet van together driving. Why is it these two people? Is that kind of the question?
Yeah, well, see, but I'm talking about the beginning that we're shown where he goes to her house and, like, he's talking to her, then the other guy shows up. That's a little weird. And then I'm going to get to my favorite part of the movie where I may indeed spoil a little bit of what happens because the one guy they encounter on the road absolutely cracks me up. And I found it hilarious, but also very quickly... I should mention this too. There are some dark elements in this set. I just for warning for the listener who chooses to go, oh, I want to laugh. Hey, Chuck, you didn't tell me there was going to be some dark stuff in here. There is some dark stuff in there, but it's legitimate in my mind. It's all like it's not like darkness for the sake of. He was just let me just see if I can throw some messed up stuff in here. It all makes sense. The dark stuff in the satire. Yeah. So. But anyway, no, the weird circumstance where he goes to her house after she goes to their gathering, again, I'm being general here because I don't want to give away too much, but, that interaction and how it ends up is, I don't know. It's almost like we're supposed to be uncertain of what's happening there exactly because the characters are. Is that the idea? Because it's a little weird. It's a little weird the way that, I mean, the whole movie's weird, let's be honest. But but that's, again, a compliment. This part was a little out of step with the rest of it, where it was like, well, suddenly, okay, we're good with a personal situation. Like, I don't know. It came off really strange, and I'm wondering why. If you could answer that.
Yeah, I'll certainly try. And like, it's a weird movie, which is like, it's like you said, it's a good thing because it's not trying to fit into a cookie cutter, like safe viewing experience. You know, like there's just so many TV shows and movies and so much media out there that, you know, I come to this with this sort of humility of like, well, why me? Why is somebody going to stop and watch my 90-minute movie? And so I want to make damn sure that it's like, it's fun and it's strange and unexpected and not just following some like trend. So, you know, that's that. But the scene in particular that you're talking about, it's very plot driven in terms of like what the characters are saying they want out of life and what they want to do. That's like their mission statement scene. You know, that's the kind of, if you want to get structural with it, it's like, that's the act one climax of like the character has denied their journey. And now they're going to go on this road trip and they're going to go on this mission. And so in the design of the movie, it's supposed to feel like, all right, this is where they're like, they're taking the call and they're going to go follow this, this thing. But really what I think is happening under the surface is like Duncan, the lead character, he just like really needs a friend and he needs somebody to like love him. So he kind of finds himself like sort of, you know, like caught by this character, Karen Black. And so he follows her to her house, you know, to tell her to be careful, essentially, in digging too deep into this conspiracy theory that, you know, if she digs too deep, she may in fact find what she's looking for and she may not be ready to handle what she's looking for. But really what he's doing is he's just using it as an excuse to kind of show off to her and show off how much he knows and how strong he is, because he needs that affirmation. And so too does my character, the enemy, Philip. You know, he needs identity. He needs somebody to tell him what to do, you know, so that he doesn't feel like, you know, this kind of like useless, inert life.
Right. He needs to be on a mission. But here's, and I get all of what you're saying and all that makes perfect sense. I got all that. But here's my problem. She doesn't react really to him just suddenly being in her house. You know, she doesn't react to a bunch of things here where I'm thinking to myself, why are you not uncomfortable or even going, well, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do this with you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can see how he's saying, look, I'm a valid person. First of all, take my advice. Don't do this. Duncan.
Yep.
And I see your other guy coming in going, you know, listen, I'm ready to roll, you know, and I need to do this. I'm the right guy for the job. I get all that. Those two, I get their mission statements, but hers is, and I get her mission statement because it's already laid out in a previous scene. But I don't understand how it is she is not like, oh, wait a minute now. You know, like there's no back and forth about it. She's just like, okay.
We're ready to go.
Yeah, like, and I was sort of like, whoa, what is going on there? Like, almost like there's something missing. And you know what just occurred to me now is that maybe you were holding back on that to reveal it later, that regardless.
Right.
Okay. So maybe that was the case, but it was very awkward, I got to tell you, even with their mission statements. And it gave me the feel of this is beginning on an awkward foot. This is not like, okay, we're going to be friends. Let's go. This was like, at the beginning, sort of like, I'm not sure what to make of this. And neither of the characters, I think, are sure what to make of it. Does that sound about right?
That sounds right. And look, I'll be completely candid with you. You're pointing out something that's a valid point, and I would, if I was in a judging contest, I'd say, like, that's a weak part of the writing. Because, yeah, she should probably react more that, like, this guy just all of a sudden shows up in her bedroom. However, I would defend it by saying, like, you then soon realize, like, she you know, this guy shows up and they're going to go on this mission. She opens up her closet to be like, yeah, fuck yeah, let's go. And, right. you know, and then, like, has... she reveals that she is much more down the rabbit hole than maybe we previously thought, right. you know, and she's kind of got this militarized maybe perspective of the world. You know, and then she kind of does eventually begin to say, like, yeah, maybe this is a little too much. Maybe I have bitten off too much, you know, more than I can chew here. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, as you're pointing it out and laying it out there, I can't fault you for that. I'm not gonna.
Oh no! Like, listen, it's not like I'm trying to pick apart the movie. Understand? It's just one of those parts where I was kind of like, am I meant to feel awkward here? Because I do, and I think I am. So it makes sense, though. It does make sense. It's just a little
weird. I
agree
with you there. Yeah, you are meant. It is supposed to be awkward right from the get go, definitely that's like the. Even her wardrobe in that scene is meant to sort of, you know, act as this kind of like, it sort of like shakes Duncan a little bit, the lead character, you know, kind of like, you know, he maybe didn't realize that, like, you're sneaking into somebody's bedroom, you know?
Yeah.
And so it sort of begins this pattern that you see of, like, he has an expectation. He kind of, he's going to keep kind of pushing a little bit further and towing the line. And every time he tows the line, there's a warning sign there. They're like, oh, be careful, dude. This might not be the best idea what you're doing.
Right. So I want to go yeah. and reveal actually part of the movie, kind of spoil something a little, okay? Because it is my favorite scene, and if you take it out of context, it won't make entire sense. So it's still worthy of seeing. They encounter a character who's, I don't remember if he got a name or not. It really doesn't matter because he's walking across a road with a walker, like he's having a hard time getting across the road. Right. And I'm telling the listener this, not you, obviously, you know, but, the thing is he's going across the road in a walker, and I'm not going to say exactly how, but at some point, you know, first of all, the walker guy is in the middle of nowhere. Is really okay. There is a, to me, this is an instrument of metaphor here. Okay. That is, again, a brilliant piece of writing. to the casual observer, this may appear to be a random piece of the movie. It is not, in my mind, but at some point they get involved with this guy they find on the road. He's going across the road in a walker. I'm not going to tell you what happens exactly, except that this will be the first time that we actually see Duncan have to do something violent. And when this happens, he does have the skill to pull it off. No problem.
Yep.
But he now is confronted with the reality of the situation, which, again, your character gets later on, and I'm happy he does. But, you know, again, I'm rooting for your character to get killed earlier in the movie. I want you to know that. Okay. So, thing is, Duncan, though, when facing it, deals with it, and Karen deals with it, and I'm starting to question the multiple layers of motive with Karen right then and there. Okay, because earlier on, I think I got her pegged. But then when I watch her reaction to this, where Duncan is very vulnerable, very very human reaction. Again, I'm not trying to spoil too much of it, but old man in the walker there does not fare well in the violent situation. And it's really great what happens.
This is where the movie definitely, like, takes its big tonal shift, and it's specifically in this moment because, like, you know, like, looking way back at the issue of the subject material and Alex Jones and the Trump administration and everything, you know, I just have always had this thought of, like, it's funny until it's not. You know, it's Alex Jones was this beloved clown in Austin until he went too far. Mm-hmm. And you know, so the movie sort of tries to mirror that, where it kind of leads you to believe that we're on this road trip, kind of like comedy of errors. But yeah, they're literally on the road, and I've kind of always viewed this scene that you're talking about as like, this is where they cross the River Styx.
Right.
This is where like they're crossing into hell, and there's a price to be paid for that, you know.
Right.
And both of these characters have to use their respective weapons to sort of cross the river, you know. And this old man character with the walker is sort of like, you know, he's the boatman.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, if you kind of want to look at it thematically, of like why it's planted there and sort of why does it have this kind of strange vibe to it, because you'll agree with me, like the movie takes a pretty big shift at that point.
Right.
You know, because they've gone a little too far. You know, they've kind of, you know, as I said earlier, they bought the ticket. Now they got to take the ride.
No, this is definitely, as you put it, the moment of handing the coin to the ferryman, because you are going to the underworld, and it is so well done. I would not have expected a dramatic device in this case to be an old man with a walker in the middle of nowhere. It was so brilliant. And another thing, you mentioned Trump just now, but you're not hitting Trump on the nose really in this movie, which I think is also a clever move. You don't have to hit that on the nose. You're already hitting the Pizzagate thing on the nose. You're already hitting Alex Jones as hard as you can without mentioning his name directly in the movie, far as I'm concerned. And it is so, so well done. I just, again, this scene, though, really does shift the movie into another gear. And I did not expect things to go the way they went. If I were to imagine this, I kind of thought that this is one of those, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of filmmakers make things that I can easily predict, and either you got to make me enjoy that ride a lot, or I'm bored and I'm done with you. And
right.
I'm a harsh critic when it comes to that kind of stuff. And what you did here was to keep me on my toes, okay, and still accomplish this very direct thematic shift, and it was really, really seamless. I mean, again, credit to Duncan, and I like how you point out that Duncan and Miss Black use their respective weapons, because they do.
Yep.
But also, even just the character that has the walker is a symbol, and could be a lot of different symbols to a lot of different people. But either way, this is the coin to the ferryman, as you said. Perfect analogy. So I don't know where else to go without really revealing the rest of the movie or spoiling the ending. The ending, again, I did not predict. I'm not going to go into details, but I really didn't think it was going to go that way either. You know, there were certain points that I said, okay, I know how this is going to end. And it did not do that, which I found interesting. And then the weird role reversal. See, if the movie would have ended when, you know, Karen is untied, I would have said, oh, you disappoint me, because I predict that that's about where this story ends. But you didn't do that. And I really like what happened next.
Yes.
And it is really makes a lot of statements. If you're not paying attention, you got to go back over it. In my mind, I want to watch it again, because I want to make sure I caught everything that happened here. Certain story arcs all collide and converge at a particular point. And then there is the, what shall we call it? The afterwards, if it were in a book, you know, where it's like, and this,
the epilogue,
epilogue. Yeah, exactly. The epilogue section, which is very short. It's not like, you know, extraneous. You're not like killing us with a lot of details, but what you lay out there with, again, minimal exposition, but very sensible to the story, wraps up a bunch of questions and really the entirety of the story into where it needs to go. Again, this is a brilliant satire in my mind. And is I was laughing out loud, honestly. And I do not laugh out loud at a lot of movies or even comedians, frankly. But the thing is, this was cracking me up because I had a personal attachment to some of what was going on here. And also, the great job of acting by, you know, the guy who plays Duncan, first of all, your job was well done. Although, again, I was thrilled when your character got shot. But Karen Black, the character of Karen Black, does a very weird sort of muted thing that at certain points, honestly, I thought, well, maybe she's just, and I'm going to be honest with you, beginning of the movie, I thought maybe she just wasn't a very good actress. As the movie continues, I found out she actually is. Which,
right,
it was,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about, for sure. And you're right.
Okay. So and it's because she's acting within the acting role. And again, I wasn't beaten over the head with it, so I didn't realize it at first, but it all comes together and makes sense at the end. Which, you know, again, some other movie makers need to take lessons from you about that, because you got stuff at the beginning of your movie doesn't make sense, and then anyway, I'm not going to go to particulars, but honestly, really well done. So let's talk a little bit about Karen Black with the last couple of minutes, and then tell people again, like I said, I'm going to put up the trailer in the show notes, and anything that you want me to include, actually, as far as people to go get the movie, it's available on quite a few platforms. If you want to get a digital download, is there a way to get a DVD version of this thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am, again, footing a lot of this bill myself and kind of doing this, ad hoc, kind of scrapping it all together. And I've gotten myself into a position where I just literally have nothing to spare for physical media. But that said, if we can get a good showing with this, this initial release that just happened, and like you said, the movie's out there for, it's a pretty cheap rental, a pretty cheap purchase. Then there is this wealth of merch that is ready to be executed on. 'Cause this is one of those movies that has that, you want to see the VHS version of it. You want to, if you're going to get the score, you want to get it on vinyl or even cassette tape, And it's got that kind of world to it. So, ideally I'm hoping that I can kind of balance the books, so to speak, and be able to put forth a pretty awesome DVD, Blu-ray kind of release of it, where you might see some commentary stuff or some behind-the-scenes stuff, because there wasn't a lot cut from the movie. What you do see is virtually what we wrote, but there's probably about, some of the scenes we kind of condensed and took about 15 minutes out of the final cut of the movie, or what you see of the final cut. There's about 15 minutes more of material.
Well, yeah, I'll say this. You don't waste any time in it. I do want to talk about Karen Black, but physical media, okay, not available yet. But just for the listener's interest, I've seen this thing on a couple of different platforms. You're talking about owning it for less than $10. You're talking about renting it for less than $5. I found out that some place had it for $3 if I wanted to rent it for a month, stuff like this. And I am urging you guys to plunk down a couple of dollars and get a hold of this thing, because I found it entertaining. And I do not buy a lot of movies, I'll be honest with you. Okay. I really don't, because it's just, there's so much out there and so many things that it's just... But this is worthy of owning or adding to your digital collection, just so you guys know. And if you don't believe me, check out the trailer, because I checked out the trailer with a skeptical mind, and I'll tell you, I had to get this movie. So Karen Black, in just a couple of minutes, the character of Karen Black, again, hilarious, but she winds, I'm telling you, I started out the movie thinking she's not a good actress. And then realized, no, she's acting within her role as an actor. In other words, you're watching an actor play a character who is playing a character to people. It's two levels of acting. and the muted performance is actually appropriate. So even when you first start to see her on screen and you go, eh, she's not so good, you're wrong. Okay, just go ahead. Go ahead and tell us about her a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like she as an actor is a very like minimalist kind of just keeps it very quiet, you know. But there is this like depth to her that, you know, if you can kind of bring the material and meet her a fraction of where she's at as an acting talent, then you can kind of get the rewards of what she has to offer. And you know, so as an actor, she is this very powerful person and really effective, just good at her job, right? Mm-hmm. And as far as the movie is concerned, and then the character, we all kind of knew that, you know, although the main character, the main focus is this Duncan character, this kind of like right wing sort of troubled individual.
Right.
It really is Karen Black's origin story. Mm-hmm. You know, it is her sort of like she kind of goes through just about the biggest arc of any character in the movie. And that is also kind of functioning as in the same way that you might start off thinking that you hate Duncan because of where you stand politically.
Yeah.
But then by the end of it, you feel for him and you're like, you feel bad for like what he has gotten himself into.
Right.
There's sort of an equal and opposite thing occurring with Karen's character that sort of says, you know, you might really trust this person and you might think that this is the avatar of the film's angle politically. But it actually shows you that, no, we are all susceptible to whims of fantasy and kind of a desire for identity. You know, she has this idea of who she wants to be, and she's going to go embark on this mission to achieve that identity. But what ends up happening is she comes out the other end very differently. You know, she goes to war and comes out very cold. You know, and so that's kind of how her character functions. And it is sort of this maybe greater argument about the power of capitalism and how that sort of has this reward system that slowly but surely will eke away one's true identity, you know, in the name of the all holy dollar, you know.
Right.
And so that's kind of where this like story in a sense comes to a point, no pun intended, in that like, you know, you've got this Illuminati, the pyramid, you know, and like we're all seeking this eye, and what is the truth of the eye? But really what it is it's embedded into the dollar bill, you know, and like it all kind of comes back down to that bigger story and that bigger cancer of society of sort of capitalism gone awry.
And see, that's the thing about
the effects of that.
And that's the thing about the general message of the movie. I would add that at the end, you realize that in this strange land we find ourselves in with the media, that when people go after things as they sometimes do in the atypical media streams or the typical media streams, you know, that there are consequences and literally no one escapes them unscathed, which I really like that the movie does this, where there is not, you know, the unscratched character here.
Right.
Nobody gets out without, well, you know, partially cutting up the bill for the ferryman. You know what I mean? Everybody's got to pay if they're going to involve themselves in these things. And again, it's satire. The Pizzagate massacre, I got one question from a live listener, which is interesting to me, and quite frankly, I would buy one. Are you going to sell the movie posters at all?
Oh, man. Again, yeah, I would love to sell this poster because this listener is definitely like has picked up on something. Our poster is incredible. And I know that I'm supposed to be the humble person in this exchange. But God, I'll tell you, like the Mark Schoenbach, who did this poster, perfectly captured something, and it's incredible. And I'd love to get it out there. We're kind of figuring out some ways to sort of get around the fact that we're just a kind of a poor, scrappy little, traveling troubadours of nobody artists here, which is hilarious because we oftentimes get attacked from kind of QAnon followers as being Hollywood elite. And it's like, God, tell me where to sign up. I wish I could be Hollywood elite. I wish I could be getting these George Soros checks because I'm certainly not.
No. And clearly, look, you if you were, you'd be a lot better funded. No offense. If you were,
yes,
you would have gotten a lot
exactly.
more attention for this movie. And frankly, look, I'm again, this is not to offend you. You know,
you'd be working
with a lot more.
You hit the nail on the head. You hit it on the head there, where people are like they're accusing us of being some democratic kind of like psyops type of thing, and we're trying to disillusion their believers. And it's like, really, you think that would be the sort of effort? Is like, let's make a micro budget movie with no stars and no marketing spend. That'll take them down.
That'll do the job.
Yeah, it's absurd on its face, but so too is the conspiracy theory itself. You know, it's like it's
exactly. So look, one more time though. I mean, it's available on a lot of different platforms. Even if you have cable, your local cable company might offer it to you as part of your digital collection. But it's out there. The Pizzagate Massacre. Anything else you want to add? Is there a website? I didn't even go to the website. Nothing. I just looked at the social media, looked at what JG had to say, looked at the trailer, and had to have the movie. So that's all I had to do. But is there a place, a website they can go or anything?
Yes. Yeah. It's literally just thepizzagatemassacre.com. And
exactly.
Like you said, we're all over on social media.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
Revelation through conversation.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect, I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JP Sotili and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Chili.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Thank you.